tax cuts, social welfare increases, and a plan to get children away from their screens. Just some of the promises made at the Fianna Fáil Ardéis this weekend, coming less than a year from a general election, less than 2 months from the local and European elections. And we're joined in the studio now by the Fianna Fáil leader and Minister for Foreign Affairs and Defence, Tánaiste Micheál Martin. Welcome to the programme.
Thank you, Justin.
We'll talk about those promises and your Ardéis shortly, but I want to start with events overnight in Israel, which was attacked by Iran, which fired hundreds of missiles and drones at Israel in retaliation for an attack on the Iranian consulate in Syria 2 weeks ago. It's a very serious escalation in hostilities in the Middle East. It is a nation-to-nation attack. Israel has said it will respond. Must we prepare ourselves now for a wider regional war in the Middle East?
I think we have to do everything we possibly can to prevent that and to call on all parties to de-escalate this crisis. I condemn the Iranian attack on Israel. It is extremely flagrant abuse of international law and a very, very dangerous response to the attack by Israel on the consulate in Damascus, which in my view was wrong also. And Iran has been a malign actor in the Middle East for quite some time. It has been supporting Hezbollah, Hamas and the Houthis in Yemen. And that's perhaps hasn't been called out to the degree that it should have been. We've been very consistent in that regard. And it's the people of the region will suffer here. And we know what war is doing all over the world. We know the horrific impact of the Ukrainian war on hundreds of thousands of young men and women who are being killed, just to make the point, and likewise in Gaza. And the last thing the world needs is a regional conflict involving Israel and Iran, which would have horrendous consequences for lives and livelihoods in the region, but also for the wider world.
You said after the Hamas attacks on Israel that it had a right to defend itself. Does it have a right to defend itself against this attack too?
Well, I think the overriding priority here, it's not about rights at this stage. It's about to do the right thing by the people of the region and by the people of the world. A war here will be ruinous and devastating for people and citizens and civilians all over the region. And that's why this must not escalate any further. And that is why the G7 and the United States and others are urging restraint in terms of this. Iran is saying now that their attack has concluded and they've made that statement to the UN. I think there is a window there for de-escalation to occur. I think it was noticeable that there were many countries came together to thwart this attack. The airspace closed down to facilitate the defence of Israel against these drones and against these missiles. And I think that leverage perhaps is there within the international community who supported and helped to repulse the Iranian attack yesterday, perhaps to leverage for a de-escalation and reducing tensions in the region.
You said during the week that Ireland is going to recognise the state of Palestine. Does that mean that Ireland will formally recognise the political leadership in Palestine, which includes Hamas in Gaza?
No, I think what it means is a recognising of a Palestinian state as laid out in terms of the Oslo Accords and in terms of the 1967 borders and in terms of what UN frameworks have ordained. It doesn't necessarily, in terms of the actual composition of any government at any given time, but the idea of a two-state solution has been there for a long time. It has been undermined, in our view, by consistent Israeli policy. And we're working with other member states within Europe and outside of Europe in respect of the recognition question. And ideally, it would have been in the context of an Arab peace plan. Saudi Arabia, Jordan, the Palestinian Authority have all been working with others, Egypt as well, to devise that plan, understanding the security needs of Israel and so forth. They've presented, I understand, that to the US and want to do likewise with Europe. And that would have been the ideal moment to recognise Palestine, to give a fillip to the peace process.
Israel's ambassador to Ireland said this week in an op-ed in the Irish Times that a unilateral recognition of a Palestinian state at this point sends a dangerous signal to Hamas and its supporters, since it will be viewed as rewarding terrorism. Is she right?
No, I think that's an absurd assertion. And I think Israel needs to respect the democratic views of other countries. And for a long, long time, everybody was on the one page in respect of a two-state solution. So how is it in any way rewarding terrorism to say that we recognise a Palestinian state, particularly in the context of moving to a situation where we can get peace. The only way you have peace, I think, in the future is coexistence between Israelis and a Palestinian state.
Do you consider Hamas to be terrorists?
Yes. And I've been very clear in my condemnation of Hamas. And again, I think the Israeli ambassador was not accurate and was not correct in that article.
But are you not, though, legitimizing then Hamas, which is part of the government of Gaza, the administration of Gaza, if you go ahead and recognize the state of Israel?
We're legitimizing the aspirations of Palestinians. Across Gaza, Palestinians across the West Bank. It has been international perspective for a long, long time that there would be two states, that there would be a state of Palestine. And what we cannot continue with, Justin, is a continuing undermining of the viability of a Palestinian state, which is what has happened over the last decade or two, where settlements have been encouraged, supported and expanded to the detriment of the viability of a Palestinian state, where we've witnessed Palestinians being displaced in the West Bank, where there's been a long-standing blockade on Gaza. And in my view, the route is to promote moderation within the Palestinian state. That hasn't happened because, in some respects, extremists have been encouraged. Encouraged by other actors in the region.
But the accusation from the Israeli ambassador is that the Irish government has been soft on Hamas. She said that there's been no outcry or action against its genocidal jihadi character, its abuse of the people of Gaza, whom it uses as human shields, its abuse of civilian infrastructure such as hospitals, schools and mosques, and its indoctrination of the youth of Gaza into a cult of martyrdom. Do you accept that her criticism that the Irish government's position has been one-sided?
I do not at all. I took issue with that, and I take seriously issue with what the ambassador said there. And wrote, and will be responding to the ambassador, because I have condemned Hamas, not just its attack on October the 7th. We did it resolutely on October the 7th, and sometimes Israeli spokespeople try and call that into question. There has been no question about the unequivocal condemnation by the Irish government successive occasions in terms of Hamas as an organisation. We're part of the European Union. The European Union has identified Hamas as a terrorist organisation. And we're members of the European Union. And the idea that we haven't condemned Hamas itself, I mean, I've said it is jihadist. And I said the attack on October the 7th was jihadist in terms of the murder of civilians, the rape of civilians, and the killing of children on October the 7th. And I worry, I wonder why the ambassador has thrown something like that into the middle of this debate, sort of creating a doubt about the Irish government's position in respect of Hamas. That is not right, and that is wrong.
Okay. And I want to ask you about some of the promises you and your colleagues made at your Ardesh this weekend. They're emblazoned across the front pages of the newspapers today. McGrath pledges increase in pension, the Sunday Independent. Martin calls for €10 increase in child benefits in the Sunday Times. Squeeze Middle promised tax cuts in the Business Post. This is electioneering on a grand scale, isn't it? People will say that this is the Charlie McCreevy days of auction politics. They're back.
No, not at all. I mean, the one thing you haven't referred to is the Future Ireland Fund and the Infrastructure and Climate Fund, which is an unprecedented putting aside of money for the future by this government and by Minister Michael McGrath, who's taking the legislation on those two funds through the Oireachtas right now. And that is, for the first time in a long time, really planning for the future, that we'd have sufficient funds from tax revenue that we may not have forever, but also in terms of a percentage of GNI being legislatively put aside now every year to build up a fund that we'll invest to earn more so that we have enough money in the future for pensions, for healthcare costs, but also critically, if we're starting new road projects, new public transport projects like the metro and so on, that there'll be sufficient money put aside in the infrastructure fund to make sure we continue those projects.
Okay,
we don't cut them when there's a downturn.
We're only in the month of April, and you're out already in the Sunday Times today saying that you want a €10 increase in child benefit. Last year, when a number of Fine Gael TDs came out and spoke about their desire for tax cuts, you said that was destabilising the budgetary process.
Well, I think we are entitled to identify priorities for us at our Ardesh when we meet our membership in respect of next year in terms of the budget, but also the next 5 years, because we are now in the last 12 months of this government. There's a major budget.
You're being very specific, though, when you say there's going to be a 10 euro, you want a 10 euro increase in child benefit. Is that something that you're going to insist on?
That's something we're going to push very strongly for. And I believe that there will be a receptive response to that. I mean, last year, the tax package was about 1.3 billion, Justin. Because of our prudent management of the economy and successful management of the economy, largest number of people, 2.7 million people now working in the economy, 90,000 jobs added over the last year. So there's been a significant progress on the economy. And again, the revenue is up again in the first quarter. So, you know, we had a good budget last year. People are under a lot of pressure. Families are under pressure out there because of the inflation of the last couple of years. It's coming down, thankfully. Wages are getting ahead of inflation now again, which is a good thing. But it's reasonable to say that we should help families come through this particular period because they are under pressure, particularly families with children.
If, as you say, inflation is coming down, and it is, if energy prices are coming down and wages are going up, why are you promising more energy credits this
winter? The cost of living package that would not be of the same order next year's cost of living, or towards the end of this year, if we have a cost of living package, it will not be of the same order of the cost of living package we had in the last budget, or indeed the budget before that.
What kind of order will it be?
Because
then?
The plateau is higher for the families, to answer your question. You know, okay, the inflation rate is coming down, but prices are at a higher level for families and for people more generally. I mean, when I travel the country, and I've been in Limerick and Tipperary, with our mayoral candidate, Dee Ryan, there, for example, a lot of people are saying to me, workers in particular, that they're under pressure. And notwithstanding the fact that we've cut the costs of a lot of public services, you know, free school books and so on like that, which helps people, we've cut transport. Nonetheless, people are saying they're still under pressure in terms of the cost of living more generally.
So what's the scale of the energy increase then?
Won't be in a position right now to give the scale of that, but that's something that we'll work out as we get through the summer economic statement and right through to the autumn.
Are you gearing up for an autumn election with all of these promises? Do the big bazooka budget and then go to the people? Is that the plan?
I don't think big bazooka budgets work in elections. We've said the three leaders are committed to going the full distance into 2025 in terms of a general election.
Yeah. Nobody believes that, though.
Well, sorry. That's your problem.
Even in your own party, the likes of Willie O'Dea saying that's not a sensible approach. Bertie Ahern saying you should be going in June.
Yeah, but I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the three party leaders have met. We've discussed this. And we want to get the budget done. That's October. And we've got a legislation to get through. You mentioned Bertie. He was the person who went the full 5 years in successive elections. Now, he was fortunate in terms of it was June to June 5 years. Yeah. But in my view, I have been consistent about this. Five-year governments matter because you have less short-termism and you have a chance to get things done that will benefit people for the long term, like the Future Ireland Fund Bill, which will put the money aside for future generations, and the Infrastructure Bill and the Planning Bill. The Planning Bill is very important in terms of housing and in terms of infrastructure.
You spoke about a new joint initiative between the Departments of Health and Education to provide funding for schools to support the banning of smartphone use during school time. Why does that require funding? Why can't that policy be introduced immediately?
I think it does require funding. I've been in touch myself with quite a number of schools who, some hire psychologists, for example, who have devised plans with schools. Very interesting one in Rochester and Cork, in St. Patrick's, whereby the psychologist brought parents, children and teachers together to work out a contract, literally, on the use of mobile phones. So there will be a menu there for schools in terms of how to deal with this problem. This is I've defined this as one of the public health challenges of our time, the impact of social media and the use of mobile phones on the health of children and on their educational performance and attainment and concentration levels. And it's something that's creeping up over the years, just like the tobacco crisis of the 20th century. And this is something I think we need. And it was very disturbing recently when somebody, technology companies, didn't turn up for a meeting with Minister Norma Foley in respect of this issue. So I think resources are required. They don't have to be enormous. But I think we have to really focus on this issue, because I do genuinely believe, and the research is mounting, in terms of the negative and damaging impact on children.
And you say that you will force the social media companies to get underage children off their apps if they don't do it themselves. Why are you leaving it up to them?
We're not leaving it up to them. I think we're saying to them they should do it. I mean, they're particularly in terms of underage children. But if we have to legislate for verification, we're prepared to do that. We have an online media regulator now, and we have Commissioner Naman, which is a significant legislation which has been passed. But I think this is, particularly in terms of the impact of children and their, you know, their performance and enjoyment of school life, that particularly underage children shouldn't be. And okay, the companies might say we can't verify, or we take whatever data we get in. That's not good enough anymore.
This week we saw the election of a new Taoiseach in Simon Harris. In September 2019, you described him as a very poor Minister for Health. Do you stand over that statement now?
Well, again, I think there was real issues in health at the time, but I've worked effectively with Simon Harris in government for the last 4 years. And I think I'm very, to me, the key issue for us is implementation of the programme for government. That is key. This is not about personalities. It's about the policy content of your programme for government. We spent a lot of time negotiating it in great detail. And that would be the bedrock for our implementation.
Why did you think he was a poor minister in 2019?
Well, I think we had that debate in 2019. There was very significant issues, particularly at the time, that were well known. But we formed a government based on the programme for government. We said it's up to each party to decide on their leaders and ministers and so on. He took on the position of higher education and skills, a department that I wanted established to try and give a singular focus to further education, skills and third level and research. And we worked well together on that. And I think we'll work well together as and with him and Ryan as three leaders who understand the need for cohesion and continuity in terms of delivering and implementing the programme for government.
How did Fianna Fáil end up with the Gaeltacht Ministry? Did you ask for it or was it offered?
The Minister Cathy Martin and the Taoiseach felt that the ideal location for it would be in the Department of Tourism, Culture and the Arts. When Jack Chamber was Minister, he was in that department as Minister of Sport. Thomas Byrne is fluent, has a great enthusiasm for the Irish language. So I think it was a very good fit to go back to that department and have Thomas as Aaron na Gaeltacht.
The Taoiseach offered it, did he?
Well, I think we discussed the three. I said I believe that Thomas would be very anxious and very happy to assume that position. He's enthusiastic about it, and he is very committed to the Irish language. And he was thrilled when I rang him to tell him he was Minister for Gaeltacht, in addition to his responsibilities as Minister for Sport.
Your own government, it has performed several U-turns over the last couple of days. You're backing out of a referendum on the EU Patents Court. You're backing away from a vote on the Dublin Mayor and from a reform of disabilities payments. Are you running scared of the electorate at the moment in the wake of the defeat in the family and care referendums?
Well, first of all, there's no U-turn on the Patent Court.
You're not going to hold that referendum in
June. But that's not a U-turn.
In June.
That's not a U-turn. I don't believe the time is there now to prepare.
You were going to do something and now you're not going to do it. That's
okay,
a U-turn.
Okay. Well, in your terms, then. But I mean, the point is I support it. So I've not done any U-turn policy-wise. I actually believe, my own view is, referendums should be held on their own in isolation from elections. I was, as I say, canvassing last week when the Dáil was in recess, 2 weeks ago, in Limerick and in Tipperary and in Kerry. And we were putting different leaflets, European candidates, local election candidates. And in Limerick, the mayoral, D. Ryan, we were giving that leaflet out, mayoral candidate there. A fourth leaflet going out in a situation in Limerick. I think that could cloud the issue and make it very difficult to promote a support for a referendum, which I believe in and we will have to hold, but we're deferring it. And I think we're suggesting that we defer. The leaders will meet tomorrow evening. And I think that makes sense because the electoral commission will want time as well. And that's something that I think we need to be very clear about into the future, not to rush these things, because that's not doing anyone any favours. And the constitution, amending it, is a serious business.
Were you surprised to learn that some of your own TDs and senators, most notably your European candidate Lisa Chambers, campaigned one way but voted another in the recent family and care referendums?
Yeah, and I don't think, personally, I think people should be upfront about their positions on this. You know, the people have voted in respect of that. I accept the will of the people.
It damages trust, though, doesn't it, when you have politicians saying one thing, do one thing, encouraging people to do one thing, and then they go and do something else.
Yeah, it's not the way I would do business, quite frankly, and I think trust is important in politics. People in certain situations have doubts about measures that are going through, but
so how could people trust your candidate again now?
Sorry, well, no. In fairness, I think Lisa Chambers has explained her position. Mm. She said she changed her mind in respect of it, the referendum, in my view, was overwhelmingly, the proposals were overwhelmingly defeated, and that's that. And we move on.
And you say people should move on and trust her again now.
Well, I think people, I mean, that's in terms of the elections to the European Parliament, that's of a different order in terms of people's contribution there and people's capacity to perform in the European Parliament. And people will judge on that.
Concerns have been raised by some government TDs about proposed changes to the licensing laws to allow nightclubs to serve alcohol later into the night. The Road Safety Authority also raising concerns about that proposed change. Do you have concerns about that change, or do you support them?
Well, I think the government have proposed those changes, and the minister is working on legislation. I think if people have concerns, they can be articulated as the bill and legislation is going through the House. The reform of the licensing laws is always a very complex and difficult piece of work, and I know that from previous experience in different governments. But I think personal responsibility is key in terms of any situation. People should not drink and drive, full stop. That's it, no matter what the context is. There are different views on this. I acknowledge that. But again, I think we need to see the legislation when it's complete.
I want to ask you about the EU Migration Pact, which Ireland has decided to opt into. Sinn Féin says that we should only opt into parts of that pact, the parts which deal with combating child trafficking and the part which allows Ireland to return asylum seekers to other EU countries if they've already applied for asylum there. The rest of the pact, it says, is not in Ireland's interests and should not be supported.
Yeah, I mean, this is more, I think, of Sinn Féin Euroscepticism, and Sinn Féin is running scared of that entire debate. I find it difficult to comprehend its position. In my view, this pact strengthens procedures in respect of migration, will facilitate returns, as you have said, of people who've already applied in other
and they
member
support
states.
That, yes.
And also, in terms of, you know, it is a European-wide issue. Mm. I get the feeling it's the old story of Sinn Féin. It's half in Europe and it's half out of Europe when it suits it. And I think the coming election and so on is the context for the Sinn Féin position on this. It doesn't make sense to me.
Well, why should it be up to the EU, though, to dictate the timeframes in which asylum applications must be approved or the list of safe countries of origin?
Yeah, but these timeframes would be much faster than what we're currently doing. And when you say up to the EU, we are in the EU. I mean, Sinn Féin need to get this. We're part of the EU. We have to shape legislation.
But we don't have to sign up to this.
No, but I mean, we're part of the European Union. This is this kind of idea of one day we're in the European Union, the next day we're not in the European Union. Like, Sinn Féin is not pro-European Union, fundamentally. It's voted against every treaty. It opposed us going into the European Union, despite the fact that the European Union has been the single most transformative thing we did in terms of transforming our economy and the whole way of life in Ireland. It's been a very good thing. And we still have this attitude within Sinn Féin of being anti-Europe and anti the European Union. And actually, I think an awful lot of what's in this is good in terms of strengthening and for a firmer and a fairer system, in our view. And we will have to improve our situation in terms of the processing of applications so that economic asylum seekers, for example, are dealt with much more speedier. And if they're not genuine asylum seekers, they can be returned more quickly to the countries from which they came. So I think actually, in terms of people being concerned about the pressures and the numbers coming in, this could help reduce numbers coming in.
All right. Before I let you go, the Taoiseach Simon Harris conceded on this programme last week that the next EU commissioner would be nominated by Fianna Fáil. There's no argument as far as he's concerned. I think differs from his predecessor on that one. Is Michael McGrath your top choice for that job?
No. At this stage, there's no one. No, sorry, not in terms of No, in terms of we've made no decision on that, and that's a matter that we'll decide later in the year. And there will, I've no doubt there'll be a number of people who might be interested in that, including Michael, but I mean, I don't know.
Yes, would it have to be a cabinet-level appointment?
It would have to be a senior appointment, yes, of course.
And so somebody would have to be taken out of national politics, you think, do you?
But there's no, I mean, as I say, we're reflecting on that, but it has to be someone of a senior status in public life generally, who would be have the appropriate qualifications and experience to fill a position like a European Union Commissioner.
Tánaiste Micheál Martin, thank you very much for talking to us today.